it's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Coming up in this hour, mystery from the Mr. Keene Tracer of Lost Persons show, one of the most enduring and popular during radio's yesteryear. Right now, it's radio's outstanding theater thrills, Suspense, a CBS episode from November 6th, 1947. Wally Mayer, Joseph Kearns, and comedian Henry Morgan star in Dream Song.
Suspense. Tonight, Suspense brings you as star, Mr. Henry Morgan. Each week, you hear Mr. Morgan as prime comedian in his own radio show. Tonight, he appears in a role different from any he's ever played before.
And now, Shenley brings you radio's outstanding theater of thrills,
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A. Roma Wines of Fresno, California. And starring Henry Morgan in Dream Song, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Shenley by William Spear.
The apartment was 1.5 rooms, not enough space to turn around, sleep, and eat in. But it was enough for a bachelor like me, and I felt lucky. I'd had to move out of my last place in sort of a hurry. You know how you get pushed around nowadays. And I had no real right expecting anything even halfway decent to turn up for me so soon. I went about installing myself, which merely means bringing in my old studio couch, an old chair, about 3 trillion books, a couple of Matisse prints, and my typewriter. I was all set in a day or two and ready to get down to real work on the book. One evening, I came in after a good dinner, sat down to finish off sequence. Wasn't writing easy. I felt that I was getting off on a tangent. I was going a million miles away from what I wanted to say, and it annoyed me. It was then that I heard it for the first time. It was coming from the next apartment, and coupled with my bad writing, it was very annoying. I tried to ignore it, but that couldn't be done. Got up and walked around the room a few times. That didn't help any, so I sat down and tried to write again. But it was tough. The right words came like water from a closed faucet. And then the music stopped, and it was suddenly very peaceful. I felt my mind settle down. I started once more. There, it was going along pretty well now. I was thinking clearly. The phrases were right. The mood was good. The dialogue, the things started up again. Yanked the paper from the machine and tossed it into the wastebasket. I was through for the night. A few nights later, after spending the entire day reading, which is so much more delightful than writing, I decided it was about time to sit down and start pounding it out. It's a beautiful night. Took a lot of willpower to tear myself away from the window. I smoked a couple of cigarettes, decided I'd start work after them, then smoked a few more, and listened to the night noises of the city. After that, I searched my pockets for some more cigarettes, but I didn't have any, so took a deep breath, reluctantly turned my back on the city, and sat down at my work table. There was a story in the paper that I wanted to keep because it was sort of like the situation I was writing about, and I was cutting it out. And then, almost as though it was timed, that canned music started up. Well, that settled my work for the night again, I thought. That fool in the next apartment, whoever he or she might be, was probably planning to serenade himself for hours on end. And yet, strangely enough, I half hoped that the music would go on. It was a very lovely evening, and I was looking for the slightest excuse to lounge around. I had just started thinking of going for a walk when the music stopped. In the stillness that followed, I could hear steps. And then a door opening and closing, and then a long, long silence. Then I was back at my typewriter, and everything was fine. The words were coming right from my brain to my fingers, and as I wrote, I could see the next line and the next. And then, while I was working, I became conscious of the next-door footsteps, and it disturbed me. I sat up, stretched, yawned, looked at my watch. 1 o'clock in the morning. I hadn't realized it was that late. Yes? Who is it?
It's me, Mr. Kenyon, the janitor. Please open the door.
What's wrong, Orr? You always come around at 1 in the morning.
Oh, excuse it, please, Mr. Kenyon.
Are you Charles Kenyon? Of course. What is it?
He's from the police station, Mr. Kenyon.
Yeah, here you are. I'm Sam Fields from this precinct. Can I come in?
Come right in. What's this all about?
Apartment 4D, Mr. Rhodes.
Why don't you shut up? Kenyon, you've been home here all night?
Yes, I have.
What have you been doing here all night?
Oh, Mr. Kenyon's all right.
Look, are you going to keep your trap shut? Now, go ahead, Kenyon.
Well, I'm a writer, and I've been working all evening. That's about all.
You didn't hear no noise, no commotion?
No. What's happened?
Well, the man in apartment 4D's been killed. Murdered.
God, the floor is all covered with blood. We'll never get it off without scraping. That'll run up a bill, too.
4D, that's two flights up?
He was a pretty good guy, that Mr. Rhodes. He gave me a 5 for Christmas.
We're just in here checking up. I don't suppose you knew him.
No, I didn't.
Well, he must have been killed a short time ago. The coroner's upstairs now. The janitor here heard a struggle and phoned in.
I live in 4E now. The owner chopped the basement up into 3 apartments. He makes a barrel of money that way, you know.
Mr. Rodson was just about dead. There. I'm surprised you didn't hear us go up.
I was busy writing.
You must have been.
All that blood on the floor. We'll never get it off. Why, the next tenant will have to paint that floor red.
How was he killed?
He was stabbed in the back with a sharp instrument of some kind.
Yeah, that's right, in the back.
Not a knife, the doc says. Could be maybe a shears or a scissors.
Oh, he looked around. We couldn't find no scissors at all.
The murderer isn't giving out souvenirs this week. Well, Mr. Kenyon, I guess you're okay. We may want you to come down to headquarters for a few questions tomorrow. If so, I'll let you know.
Yes, of course.
Well, you can go back to your writing now. What do you write? Detective stories?
No, about people.
Yeah? That's who commits the murders, too, people. Although I must say, some of my best friends are people. What'd you write tonight? I don't see nothing around.
I don't like to have people see it, you know, until it's finished.
Hey, I got a tenant already for that apartment.
Maybe that's where the guy was knocked off so someone could get the apartment.
What about his wife?
Oh, 4D's got no wife. Now, I know he has got a young lady, but he's a bachelor.
All right, all right. We ain't interested in gossip. Let's go. I'll be seeing you, Mr. King.
Yeah.
Night. One night, a week after that, I was lying in bed trying to sleep. Don't know why I couldn't sleep. I'd been working hard all day. I was dead tired. My legs felt heavy, but my brain, instead of feeling dull, was sharp and alert. And quite suddenly, for no reason, I felt waves of chills run along my spine. I sat up in bed. I reached for a cigarette. Looked at my watch. 2:20. I'd wanted to get up at 7. I snuffed out the butt and leaned back. Somehow, I seemed a bit more relaxed now. I closed my eyes and felt comfortable, tired out. And then, there it was again. That music. And I was wide awake again, and tense and jumpy as a cat. I don't know why it made me feel that way, but it did. And it went on and on. Sometimes it would seem to be fading away, and then it would be loud again, and then fade again. I crouched beneath the covers and threw the pillow over my head. That was better. I could still hear it, but it wasn't so bad. And it seemed to get farther and farther, farther away. I was so tired, exhausted by now. I heard that sort of thump from somewhere upstairs, but it didn't matter now. All I cared about was sleep. Sleep. Just sleep.
Mr. Kenyon. Mr. Kenyon, are you all right?
What? Of course I'm all right. Just a minute. I'm still in bed.
Can't a man sleep around here without...
Oh, people? I didn't know you were asleep.
You always sleep this late, Kenyon?
Oh, Inspector, I didn't recognize you. Guess I'm still a little bleary-eyed. Come on in.
I ask if you always slept this late.
12, Yeah, I guess it is late. No, I don't usually, but I couldn't get to sleep last night.
Shut up.
Kenyon, do you know the guy who lives upstairs?
That was Mr. Blackwell, the lawyer.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't know anyone around here. I do my work, and that's all I know. Look, you asked me these questions the last time you were here.
Yeah, I know, and I'm asking them again.
Mr. Blackwell, he's been killed.
Killed? Upstairs?
Yep.
Killed the same way.
Floor filled with blood, just like 4D.
Well, last night, I did hear something. I didn't think it was anything then. It was just a sound, like a table or something falling over from upstairs.
There was no table falling. What time do you think you heard it?
A little while after I went to bed. A little after 2 a.m.
Mr. Blackwell divorced his wife 5 months ago, and she was such a nice
Coroner
woman.
Coroner says death took place around that time. You didn't hear anything else, did you?
What?
I said, did you hear anything else?
Anything else? Anything else? That music. But I couldn't tell him about that. I couldn't tell that to a detective. Or that terrible feeling I had when I heard it. It would sound silly, crazy. I couldn't.
Yeah. Did you hear anything else?
No. No, I didn't hear anything else. I went to sleep right after that, and I didn't wake up till you rang the bell just now.
The Blackwell gave me a 10 for Christmas. He never smiled. He was a very
sad
man.
We've been checking up to see if everyone else is all right.
Has anyone else?
No, just this guy above you. I guess we got some sort of maniac operating in this area.
He tries to get me. He's going to get a big surprise. I got a license to carry a gun. I got a good gun, too. My son, he brought it to me from Germany.
Well, don't go shooting the tenants just because they can't pay the rent.
Why, everybody pays the rent here.
Did you ever see a guy with no sense of humor?
Well, this whole thing doesn't seem particularly funny.
Well, don't you worry about it, Mr. Kenyon. You've got the whole police force protecting you, and don't worry about it at all. Well, I'll probably be seeing you. So long, sir.
Goodbye, Mr. Kenyon.
Oh, Mr. Torsten, will you stay a moment? I'd like you to do something for me.
Why, sure.
Mr. Torsten, you seem to know a good deal about everyone in the building.
Well, I don't snoop around. I'm the janitor.
Oh, no,
I just see them when other people don't. So
yeah, I don't mean it that way. I just want to ask you a question or two. Huh. This Mr. Blackwell, who was killed, he was living alone, wasn't he?
Yeah. Like I told you, he was married, but his wife moved out. Do you know it's harder to take blood off the floor than it is from the walls? You can paint the walls, but the floor has to be scraped and sanded.
What about my neighbor to the left, next door?
2E? Well, I don't know much about him. I just seen him once. He never bothers me. His name is Williams.
Has he got a phonograph?
Oh, he's got lots of records for the phonograph, too. I seen them when they put the telephone in. That was the only time I was ever in the place.
I see. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Torsten.
Well, say, thank you, Mr. Kenyon. And if there's ever any time you ever want anything, don't you be afraid to ask.
No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Henry Morgan in Dream Song. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
For the first time in my life, I felt genuinely afraid. Because it was something you couldn't know, couldn't fight. An innocent knock on the door, you open it. The next thing that happens is that you're found in a pool of blood. With that intolerable canned music coming from next door. I wondered what that Williams looked like, living next door. Why should he play that one record over and over again when he had so many? Torsten said that. I wondered what he sounded like. The house phone.
Yes, Mr. Kenyon?
Give me Mr. Williams' apartment, 2E. The music started. That meant he was in. And I could find out what he sounds like.
There's no answer. Shall I keep ringing, sir?
Well, why doesn't he answer? He's there. Maybe he knows I'm calling. Maybe he can hear me call.
Shall I keep ringing, sir?
Well, why doesn't he... No. Never mind, operator. Never mind. was certain that Williams had heard me call him on the phone. Had been, as a matter of fact, waiting for me to call. From that day on, I left peace of mind behind. I thought of moving, but there's no place to go. I smoked more and more. I sat for hours in a dark movie, in a park, in a public library reading room. And still that record revolved in my ears. If only I could get to know who this Williams was. If I could get to see him. If I could get to observe him somehow, without his observing me. I was in the park when I thought of it. I could see our windows from the park. I hurried home. I searched in a drawer for my one war souvenir, my German liberated binoculars, powerful 8x50 Zeiss field glasses. There they were, still dusty. I wiped them with my shirt, went back downstairs to survey the terrain. I hurried over to the park, my heart beating like a trip hammer, leaned against the body of an old auto. And trying to look at ease, I looked up at William's window. The Venetian blinds were raised. I looked around, no one in sight. Quickly, I unslung my binoculars, held them up to my eyes. What was I focused on? That wasn't William's window, that was mine. Where was that window? To the left? Should be just about there. There it was. The window, as though I were a few yards from it. There was...
Having fun, buddy?
No. No, officer, I...
See anything good?
Look, officer, I was...
Yeah, just... I know. You're trying to spot planes.
Yeah. I'm trying to spot planes.
Well, why don't you try spotting them from the roof?
I never spotted anything from the roof.
Look, wise guy, I'll give you a tip. I'm easy going. But when headquarters gets on my tail, I gotta play rough. Now, somebody puts in a complaint, and I catch you causing trouble, I'll run you in. You understand?
Oh, but I...
So far, there's been no complaint. Let's just leave it that way, huh? So just beat it now before I change my mind.
For 2 days after that, the thought of that cop catching me with the binoculars made me tremble. Found my hand shaking when I lit a cigarette. Couldn't eat. I knew that I must find some way to reassure myself about Williams or I'd lose my mind. One morning, after I'd spent a sleepless night listening and watching, that music went on. My plan was to wait till the music stopped. Possibly then Williams would go out. As soon as he left, I'd slip out and follow him. I waited while that music ground out. That metallic sentiment squeezed out through a loudspeaker. 9 o'clock. 9:30. 10 o'clock. 10:30. My head started to go round and round like the record under the needle. 11 o'clock. The music still kept on. And on. And on. Suddenly I sat up quickly. Looked at my watch. 3 o'clock. I'd been sleeping. But the record, it was still...
Mr. Williams.
Torsten.
Kenyon. Oh, Mr. Kenyon.
Torsten. He always talks about blood.
Mr. Kenyon, did you say something?
Don't you come in here! Don't come in here!
Mr. Kenyon, what's the matter?
You keep away, Torsten! You keep away from me!
Keep away? Oh, all right, all right. Only, I was going to tell you, don't use the incinerator for a while. We're cleaning it out for the next couple of hours.
Incinerator? Oh. Well... Why tell me?
We tell everybody. We don't keep it no secret.
Mr. Williams, too?
He pays his rent, only he's not home. I just knocked, didn't I?
Yes, but you came in here with a key. Why?
Because I hear you yell like a bull. I thought maybe something was wrong.
Maybe something is wrong with Mr. Williams. Why don't you open his door?
Now, look, Mr. Kenyon, I don't go around opening people's doors for the fun of it. I've got a job to keep. I've got a reputation to think of. Now, if you think a super's job is easy,
well,
you've got it all wrong.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
Okay. But only please don't use the incinerator, huh?
Why did William's record stop just before Torsten knocked? Why didn't he answer Torsten's call? He wanted privacy. Privacy to play his record. Every day for the next week, that music played at the strangest hours. It became a personal message to me. I was next. Get ready, Kenyon. You're next to have the floor of your apartment scraped, the walls done over. Many times I thought of calling the police. But what good would that do? No one would believe me just because of a record. No one would believe me without some proof. That was it. Proof. Something that would stand up in court before a judge, before a jury. Yeah, but before I could get that, he might creep into this room slowly, quietly, while I was asleep, while I was in that bed, helpless like a child. Hour after hour, I walked the streets trying to think, to reason my way out. Yesterday, I sat huddled in a chair all day. The music didn't play at all. About 7 o'clock, I went out for something to eat. In the evening paper was an item that could be the basis for a good short story. When I got back, I started to clip it out. Then I got my nerves again. I locked the door. And I went to bolt the window. Locked one window. Then I went to the other one. Wait a minute. This window was the window with the fire escape. Whose window was that on the other side of the fire escape? His window. William's. I stared at it as though I were hypnotized. The light was on, which meant that he was home. Maybe I could crawl out on the platform, peek in through the window. Maybe I could get a look at him. As I was thinking these thoughts, the music sounded. And I started to sweat. Cold, icy sweat. I started to close the window, but I caught myself and pushed it back open. With the palms of my hands wet, I climbed up on the window ledge and crawled out on the fire escape. I made my way along the iron bars as silently as I could. The window was just in front of me. I felt my throat go dry as I leaned my head over to try and look in. I swallowed hard and tried to keep my body concealed. The Venetian blinds were drawn all the way, but they were slanted in such a way that permitted me to see inside. I craned my head forward and looked. Dark inside. But I could make out the living room and the phonograph. Large cabinet machine. There was a couch. And there was a man. It seemed as though he was dancing, swaying to the music, but kept getting louder. And he kept coming towards me. Nearer and nearer. He must have seen me. I couldn't move. And he kept coming nearer, moving in the shadows. Nearer and nearer. When I came out of it, I was in my own apartment, lying on my own couch. And Inspector Fields was there and a lot of other people.
Ah, he'll be okay now.
Yeah.
Did you get him? Did you get him?
Yeah, they got him. They think.
They think? Don't they know? It was Williams. I saw him in his room. He was coming at me. He was going to kill me. I was going to be next. He was coming at me there in the dark.
Take it easy, Kenyon. Take it easy. That wasn't Williams. That was me.
Oh. Listen, Inspector. Something I haven't told you. Something I heard the other two times.
Yeah?
I thought it would sound crazy, see, but I heard music. A song, an old record.
Yeah, what was it?
It was I'll See You in My Dreams. I heard it again tonight in William's room. He was playing it.
Yeah, I guess you heard it tonight, all right.
And I heard it the other two times, too. The same way, same song.
Maybe you heard it, maybe you just thought you heard it. How much do you remember? Do you remember coming at me with those scissors?
Scissors?
Kenyon, we found your other apartment. The one you moved out of a month ago.
My other apartment?
Yeah. And we found your wife.
I don't have a wife.
No, but you did. And that song you were talking about, it was on the phonograph. And your wife, she was dead.
They made me talk to a doctor today. Hallucinations, he said. Hearing the song that way, I sort of remember Alice. She was playing a record, and I was clipping something out of her. No, I don't know what to believe. Because I thought the song was real. And the woman, the dead woman, I thought that was a dream. Just a bad dream. But they wouldn't hang a man for a dream, would they?
Suspense. Dream Song, starring Henry Morgan, presented by Roma Wines.
Tonight's suspense play was by George Bellack and Ben Kerner. Henry Morgan will soon be seen in his first starring picture, the screenplay Enterprise production, So This Is New York, and may be heard every Wednesday night on another network for Eversharp Schick. Be sure to listen next Thursday, same time, to Suspense. Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense, on Tuned To Yesterday, a November 6th, 1947 broadcast from CBS, featuring comedian Henry Morgan, who was a fixture on radio in the 1940s, but not necessarily on a certain station or program. Among the trademarks of his comedy style was, in fact, incensing the sponsor of the program he was a part of, from Bristol Myers to Rave Shampoo, and famously the Eversharp Company, which made the Schick razor. This is Tuned To Yesterday, bringing you an hour of mystery. I'm your host, Mark Levinier, and now one of the most popular mystery programs of radio's past, it's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Bennett Kilpack in the CBS episode from March 16, 1944, called The Case of the Strange Display.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel's Toothpaste presents Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, one of the most famous characters of American fiction and one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday night from 7:30 to 8 Eastern wartime, the famous old investigator will take from his file and bring to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. And now, Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, who tonight brings us the case of the strange display. Our story opens in the shopping district of New York on Fifth Avenue during lunch hour. Two girls pick their way across the street through traffic. They're heading toward the show windows of the smart Morley department store, now celebrating its 100th anniversary.
You know, Sally, we really should be getting back to the office. Oh, please, Rita, it'll only take a minute, and I'm dying to see their new windows.
Oh, you and your boyfriend.
Hey, look out for that taxi. Well, I'm all right. You know, Jeff thought up this idea all by himself, so Mr. Barton stole the credit as usual.
You and your boyfriend.
Jeff was working on the display all night. This is sort of like an opening performance. Here we are.
Yeah, if we can get through that crowd.
I beg your pardon, sir. Would you mind letting us... Oh, thank you. Here, Rita, this window first.
Okay. Oh, what an old-fashioned-looking family.
They're dressed in the style of 100 years ago when the store began.
Look at that. A whole family sitting in their 1844 parlor. That's Jeff's idea.
You and your... Sally.
Yes?
Look at the old gentleman sitting by the fireplace.
What about him?
His white whiskers have fallen off, and... It's not a dummy. It's alive.
It's not alive. It's dead.
Want wanted for murder, Jefferson Jones, age 26, window dresser at Morley's department store. He is believed responsible for the fatal stabbing of his superior, Wendell Barton, last night while both were engaged in dressing the windows. Jones is 5 feet and 11 inches in height, physically slight. The body was found propped up in a display window this morning.
Here, my dear. Please sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Keene.
Now, your name, please.
Sally Wilson.
Come, Sally. Maybe it isn't that bad.
It couldn't be worse.
Well, what's the trouble? Has someone in your family, someone you love, disappeared?
Mr. Keene, did you notice the article in the newspapers today about Morley's department store?
Oh, yes. The store window's designer was found dead in the window. I believe the police are looking for his assistant.
Yes, but Jeff Jones, the boy I'm engaged to.
Oh.
Mr. Keene, I'm told you can find anybody who's disappeared. Find Jeff. Bring him back, I beg you.
The police are hunting for him already.
He'll never give up to the police. But to you.
You want me to bring him back to face a charge of murder?
I know it looks bad for Jeff. But running away is no good either. It never settles anything. Help us, Mr. Keene.
Well, I'll have to know all the circumstances. I gather from the newspapers...
The newspapers don't know half of it. Jeff is so shy, never sure of himself. Yet he's so talented and fine. Maybe he has this inferiority complex. Maybe it's because he's nearsighted. Anyhow, he's the sort of person somebody's always trying to walk over. In this case, Mr. Barton.
The man who's been murdered?
Yes. Mr. Barton was a very high-priced window designer. Conceited. And always picking on Jeff. For instance, Mr. Barton sarcastically called Jeff the great artist and Mr. Shy. Jeff didn't like it. Well, when the war broke out, Jeff decided to enlist in the Marines, but was rejected because of his eyes.
Yes, my dear, go on.
So he had to go back to his job. And how Mr. Barton rubbed it in.
Hey, Mr. Shy, shot any Japs lately?
Stop it, Mr. Barton.
The great artist has landed. The situation is well in hand.
Mr. Barton?
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli.
Mr. Barton, there's nothing funny about wanting to fight for my country, do you hear?
All right, great artist. Get back into the window.
Not a very pleasant character, Mr. Barton.
Then Jeff took me to a dance of all the store employees last week.
And what?
Mr. Barton kept telling me how pretty I was. He asked why I wanted to be engaged to a fellow like Jeff.
Hmm. Ladies' man.
Well, that night Jeff was ready to hit him. But I took Jeff aside and told him not to mind. He kept talking of quitting.
Oh, it's no use, Sally. I can't work with that guy.
But, Jeff, darling, they're giving you a raise next month. Everybody knows how good you are.
Me? I'm just a nobody.
Stop running yourself down, Jeff. Believe in yourself the way I do.
Sally, you're swell. You always make me feel so good, so important.
To me, you're the most important man in the whole world.
Sally, how soon can we get married?
Anytime, Jeff. Next week, if you want.
Okay, baby. Next week. And I'll try to forget about that guy.
So, you are getting married this week, Sally?
Yes, Mr. Keene. But now this has happened. Mr. Barton has been murdered. The police are looking for Jeff, and I've got nobody to turn to but you. Find him, Mr. Keene.
From all you tell me, Barton was a miserable man to work for. Jeff had very little reason to like him. Yet, if Jeff comes back, he faces a murder charge.
I know it, but bring him back to me, Mr. Keene. Then we'll face what comes after that together. I know he's innocent.
One moment, my dear. Hello, Mike? Get ready to leave the office with me in 5 minutes, please. Where to? The morgue.
To the morgue?
Yes, to look at the body. Working in a case like this, Sally, I'm taking nothing for granted.
Seen all you want, Mr. Keene? Lancy?
Saints preserve us. I have.
Thank you, Captain Thomas. Pull the sheet over him again.
Stabbed through the heart he was, as you can see, Mr. Keene.
And the weapon was...
We believe it was a long, sharp pair of shears, the kind that window dressers use for cutting out cardboard displays.
Have the shears been found?
Yeah, buried away in back of the show window.
Any fingerprints, Captain Thomas?
Not a one.
Wiped off, are they?
Or maybe they never got on in the first place, Mike. Window dressers sometimes wear cotton gloves so they won't make smudges.
Well, Captain Thomas, I noticed one other thing. There was a bruise on Barton's left temple.
Oh, yeah, Miss Keene. Must have got that when he fell, after the stabbing. No fracture, though.
Then only the stabbing killed him.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Captain. Mike and I will be getting along now.
Glad to have seen you.
Well, boss, where to now?
To the Morley department store to ask more questions.
To the perfume counter, Mr. Keene?
Yes, Mike. Over this way. Right by the window where Barton met his death.
Well, what will you be wanting with perfume, Mr. Keene?
I want to talk to that young lady who sells it.
Oh, a blonde. And very razzle-dazzle.
Mike, keep your mind on business. Oh, miss.
Yes? Can I help you, gentlemen?
Perhaps. Here is my card.
Well, you're the famous Mr. Keene.
I've been engaged to work on the unfortunate accident that happened here two nights ago. I have the permission of your personnel manager to talk to all the employees.
Wasn't it dreadful? Who would ever think that shy, quiet Jeff Jones would...
May I ask your name?
Irene Harvey. But I don't know anything about it, really.
Well, Miss Harvey, how late are you usually on duty here?
Till 5:30, when the store closes.
I'm told that Mr. Barton and Jeff Jones started dressing the windows here at about 5:15 that night.
I suppose.
First, they went into that window nearest this counter. You must have noticed them starting.
I don't want to say anything against Jeff. Poor thing, he's in enough trouble.
I've been engaged to get him out of it if I can. Tell me now, did you notice anything as the men arrived there last night?
Well, they were on the outs again.
What did they say?
Well, I heard Mr. Barton.
Yes, my great artist. That was a very pretty girl you took to the dance last week.
I know she is.
What was her name? Sally?
I don't want to discuss her, Mr. Barton.
How did a dead fish like you ever
get... Stop it.
All right. Open that window now. Get inside.
That was the last you heard, Miss Harvey?
Yes. I went off duty a little later.
Oh, thank you. Mike.
Yes, Mr. King.
Let's get back to the personnel office. I want them to call in the night watchman for me. There's still a lot I want to know. A lot, Mike. You're the night watchman?
Yes, sir. Bill Hankey's my name.
I gather that on the night of the murder, you were making your usual rounds of the building.
Oh, yes.
In the course of the night, you passed Mr. Barton and Jeff Jones several times. Did you see them fighting at any time?
No, sir.
Nor did you see the actual killing?
I was probably on one of the upper floors.
Well, after the killing, it must have taken 5 or 10 minutes to dress the dead body of Barton in the dummy's clothes and prop him up in that chair in the window display.
I suppose.
But you saw none of that?
This is a big building, Mr. King.
Well, you must have seen Jeff Jones leave the store.
Oh, yes. He couldn't get out unless I passed him out.
What time was that, please?
Oh, about 5:30 in the morning.
5:30 in the morning?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that hour unusual?
No, sir. Window dressers sometimes work all night.
Well, tell me, did Jeff Jones seem disturbed?
Sort of white and nervous.
Did he explain why Barton wasn't also leaving?
He said Barton had a few things more to clean up before the store opened.
I see. Well, there's nothing more you can tell me, I suppose.
Well, you know that model cottage on the main floor, Mr. King?
Yes, what about it?
A couple of times during the night, I noticed Mr. Barton ducking in and out, each time a little redder in the face.
You think he was drinking?
That's what it looked like.
Mike, suppose you take a good look inside the cottage later.
Yes, sir, I will.
And Hanky, one more thing.
Yes, Mr. King?
Naturally, everybody in the store has been very upset by the murder. But one person seems exceptionally disturbed.
Who?
A young lady who's very good-looking. I have a hunch her good looks did not escape Mr. Barton's eye.
Oh.
Am I making sense?
Barton liked any good-looking gal.
And Irene Harvey, too?
That was no secret. The whole store knew about those two.
Now back to Mr. Keene as he looks in at another part of Morley's department store.
Mrs. Ross, You're in charge of the employees' time cards.
That's right, Mr. Keene.
I'm very much interested in the comings and goings of one particular employee.
Jeff Jones?
Irene Harvey. Would your record show what time she left the store the night of the murder?
Oh, yes. At 12 minutes after 6. But right after punching the clock, she turned and went back into the store. She said she'd forgotten a package.
Oh? When did she come out again?
Well, that I don't quite remember. There was quite a crowd leaving at that time.
Well, boss, Mr. Keene.
Hello, Mike. For one moment, please.
Boss, this is very important.
What is?
Well, come downstairs to that model cottage. There's something I want to show you.
All right. Here we are in the cottage, Mike.
Well, I searched around like you told me. First, in this potted plant over here, I found this.
A whiskey bottle. Well, I expected that.
And something more. Look in this big upholstered chair between the cushions.
A woman's handkerchief.
Look at the initials.
I-H. Now we're getting somewhere.
Irene Harvey. Boss, I got to hand it to you. We've got our hands on the murderer.
Will you ask Irene Harvey to step in here for a moment, Mike?
You stabbed him, Miss Harvey. It was your work.
No, I had nothing to do with
it. But all the evidence shows...
One moment, Mike. Not so fast. Miss Harvey.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
All the facts show that after checking out the night of the murder, you came back and hid yourself in this cottage.
All right, I did.
Why? To talk over something with Wendell Barton?
We were engaged, you know.
Engaged?
Yes. In secret. With his idea to keep it secret. And then... lately, his eye began to rove. He stopped taking me out. Wouldn't even talk to me.
So you stayed here that night to talk to him?
Yes. At times he could be charming. But that night he was drinking. And all he would say was...
Sorry, Irene. Our time is just up.
Wendell, you used to say I meant the whole world to you.
I meant it then.
Wendell... you're interested in somebody else now, aren't you?
Not especially.
Jeff's girl. That girl, Sally.
Never heard of her.
You met her at the dance. You've had nobody on your mind since then but her.
Oh, no, darling.
You mean she doesn't mean anything to you?
I mean, she isn't the only one.
Wendell, you're horrible. I won't let you do this to me. I won't let you throw me away like an old coat. I won't.
And with that, you stabbed him.
I felt like it, but I didn't.
Well, what did happen?
Jeff called him back to the window display.
Huh.
It's true. A moment later, I heard the sound of scuffling. Wendell knocked Jeff down. When he got up again, he had a thick slat of wood in his hand. Wendell laughed and said...
Cut it out, you poor fool. Stop playing Marine.
I'm not going to let you make remarks about Sally.
Put down that slat.
No, I've had enough from you.
All right, I'm coming for it.
Cold. Barton. Barton. I guess I've killed him.
I didn't stop to watch anymore. I sneaked out of the cottage and went upstairs to the employees' lounge. I stayed there the rest of the night.
That was all you saw, Miss Harvey?
That was all.
A likely story, boss. Sure she killed Barton.
No, Mike. She did not.
I don't want to seem to be bothering you, but have you found any trace of Jeff yet?
Well, frankly, Sally, I haven't begun to look for him yet.
No?
Finding him will take care of itself. If I can solve another problem first. If I can prove who really killed Wendell Barton.
You're sure Jeff didn't?
Well, I may have the answer in a couple of days. But first, I'm going on a trip.
Where to?
I'll tell you when I come back. Meanwhile, if Jeff gets in touch with you... tell him to come back at once and give himself up on my advice.
He'll listen.
He's got to. Running away was the greatest mistake of his life.
Oh, yes, Mr. Keene. I've been personnel manager here for 20 years.
And you remember Wendell Barton?
Of course. He did some very outstanding window designs for us.
And why did he leave, Mr. Riley?
Too much of a ladies' man. Oh, I could tell you a story, Mr. Keene. Barton left our store in a terrible hurry.
On account of that trouble, Mr. Riley?
That's right. Walked off a couple of weeks before Christmas. What a scandal.
And the other person involved in that incident?
Oh, didn't stay very long either. Went just about a month later.
Thank you. Now I've got it. Hello, Sally.
Mr. Keene.
I just got back. I dropped in here on my way from the station.
Oh, come right in. Tell me, any news?
The case is pretty well solved, my dear, except for the testimony of one certain witness.
Who?
Jeff himself.
I haven't heard from him.
Well, if I'm forced to do it, I can present my evidence without him. But it means a long, slow, methodical search all over the country.
Oh, one moment while I answer it, Mr. Keene. Hello? Oh, dear God. Jeff, darling.
Jeff.
Oh, darling, why did you ever run away? You were afraid my name would be dragged into this. Oh, Jeff, that was wonderful of you. But now you've got to come back, and you've got to. Oh, Jeff, please listen to me.
Sally, give me that phone.
Jeff, hold on for a second.
Hello, Jeff? No, you don't know me. My name is Keith. No, this isn't a trap. In the name of heaven, don't hang up. Now, listen to me. I want you back in New York tomorrow morning at police headquarters. Yes, in the office of the Homicide Squad. Don't argue. Do as I say.
Come in. Oh, it's you, Mr. Keene.
Good morning, Captain Thomas. Here?
Yeah, in the next room. He gave himself up, just as you predicted.
And the girl?
With him. I'm sorry for the poor guy. Maybe the jury will let him off with 20 years.
Or maybe he'll never have to face a jury. Is the other person here, too, that witness I asked you to have here?
On the way over in a patrol car.
Well, we can start in the meantime.
Now, this way.
Mr. Keene.
Hello, Sally. That's Jeff, I presume.
Keene, I came back on your say-so. I hope I won't regret it.
Jeff, I'll only ask one question. Did you stab Barton with those scissors?
No. I hit him and left him lying on the floor. But I didn't...
All right. Now then, Captain Thomas.
Yes?
You know my theory. It was after Jeff left Barton lying on the floor unconscious that the real murderer came along and struck.
But this so-called real murderer...
A person who is not quite sane any longer. Not after 10 years of brooding. 10 years of looking for revenge and fearing always to take it.
I don't understand, Mr. Keene.
As we all know, Barton was a ladies' man. 10 years ago, in a department store in Buffalo, there was another incident. Barton ran away with the wife of one of the other employees.
He did?
Soon after, she killed herself.
Oh.
Well, 10 years, the husband of that woman has haunted Barton like a ghost. For 10 years, he has followed Barton from city to city and store to store, waiting for revenge, physically afraid of Barton and hating himself for being a coward.
And he was in the store that night?
Very much so. Come right in.
They said you needed me for some evidence, Mr. Keene.
Yes, indeed. This is Bill Hanke, the night watchman at the department store.
Oh, sure. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Jeff.
Hanke, I'll come to the point. When I questioned you the other day, I was struck by one thing in your answer.
What do you mean?
The point was, at no time that anything was happening in the store that night, were you around to see it happen.
It's a big store.
But there were a lot of things happening.
Well, I didn't want to get Jeff in trouble.
Or would it be, Hanky, that you were covering yourself up?
Myself up? What do you mean?
The fact that you yourself stabbed Barton to death.
Barton? You mean... Barton, the big frog.
Very big. Strong and sure of himself. You wanted to get back at him for years because he'd wronged you. But not until you found him lying there unconscious.
Yeah, unconscious. And this time?
This time you were stronger. This time there wasn't any chance of his beating you down. And so you picked up the scissors.
He had it coming to him. I waited 10 years. And then I got him.
But you won't get me.
There he goes for the door.
He won't break out of police headquarters. I'll get him downstairs.
Well, Captain.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
I have the feeling that a psychiatric hospital would be a better place for him than a cell, poor man.
Yep. You're right.
Mr. Keene.
Yes, Jeff.
I see now that I should never have run away.
Sally could have told you that. She's a wise girl.
You proved it, Mr. Keene. I owe you my life.
And what you make of it in the future, you owe to yourself and Sally. You've got a great deal of talent, from all I understand. Well, don't hide your light under a bushel.
Well, sir.
I know you're not going to fail. And there's nothing like having a wife who believes in you fully to make you believe in yourself.
Listen next week as Mr. Keene brings us The Case of the Room That Vanished. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, better known to fans at the time just as Mr. Keene. That CBS episode from March 16, 1944, part of their Thursday night lineup at 7:30, where 8.5 million people were tuned in, just about the same amount that were listening to The Lone Ranger three times a week at that same time. And that wraps this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.